What was life like for those living in the Crusader states? When the Latins established themselves in the East, they were a minority who followed the teachings of the Church in Rome and believed in the primacy of the Pope. As well as Sunni and Shi'i Muslims and Jewish communities, there were a large number of Christians already present in the Near East who spoke different languages and followed different rites. Greeks, Syrians, Armenians, Jacobites, Georgians, Nestorians, Copts, Maronites, and Samaritans. In rural areas, distinct groups might live separately in their own villages. But in urban areas, populations were usually very mixed, and so the Crusaders encountered different religious practices at various pilgrim shrines. For those Crusaders who settled, the primary goal was establishing authority, and it seems that they made little or no concerted effort to convert the existing populace. Instead, subjected Muslims, Jews, and Christians were treated as second-class citizens. The Crusaders inherited the Muslim system of dhimmis, where a subjected group of a different faith paid a poll tax to continue living and working in a particular area. Many of the indigenous Christians spoke Arabic, which was treated by the Crusaders with suspicion and led to some negative ethnic stereotyping. Eastern Christians were seldom allowed to hold office, and the same held true for Jews and Muslims. However, relations with indigenous Christians, at least in the early phases of settlement, were crucial to the processes of communication and translation. A lingua franca probably grew up around trading areas. The settler Fulcher of Chartres asserted that words of different languages have become common property, known to each nationality. But later in the century, we see settler nobles like Reynold of Sidon or Humphrey of Torron who were bilingual, and they engaged as translators and negotiators with Saladin. However, some argued that standards of living for subjected populations were relatively comfortable. Ibn Jubayr, an Iberian pilgrim travelling to Mecca in the 1180s, expressed astonishment that even when Muslim and Christian rulers were at war, the business of trade between Muslims and Christians continued without interference. It seems that those who lived in the cities certainly had a better standard of living and more opportunities, potentially. Muslim and indigenous Christian villages were self-governed to an extent by a headman and able to use their own laws to police their communities. And in the countryside, archaeological work has provided evidence of wine, olive and sugar cultivation, as well as animal husbandry. But trade and pilgrimage in the urban centres and ports in particular were the driving force behind economic power. When Baldwin I was crowned, his kingdom pretty much consisted of three cities: Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Jaffa. Taxes on trade and pilgrim traffic were key, and the maritime city-states sought to control these where possible. Goods traded from the west included timber, metals such as iron and copper, amber and textiles, in return for spices, fish, leather, livestock, and other manufactured goods such as pilgrim souvenirs, pottery, soap, artifacts made by gold and silversmiths in the east. Some Jewish communities focused on skills crafts like silk, dyeing and glass manufacturing. We know there was also a continuing trade in arms and weaponry, despite the potential for both sides using them on each other. Pilgrim traffic was also a regular feature of life in the Near East. Christian, Muslim and Jewish pilgrims regularly travelled to visit a wide range of holy sites. First and foremost Jerusalem and Mecca, but also smaller shrines and sites of religious significance. If they travelled by sea, pilgrims would usually wait until spring when the passage across the Mediterranean was less dangerous, and Easter was a particularly significant time for Christian pilgrims. Thus, this was a very busy time of year for travellers.